Man River, that old Man River, he must know something, but don't say nothing. He just keeps rolling. He keeps on rolling along.
Hello, everybody. This is Rish Outfield, and you're listening to the Rish Outcast. Sorry about that little outburst a moment ago. When I was a kid, my mom would try to do all these things to get me out of my shell, to make an extrovert of me rather than the introvert that I tended to be. You know, I always wanted to just sit and veg out and watch TV, or later I discovered comic books, and that's all I ever wanted to do, that kind of thing. And so she tried a bunch of different activities, you know, swimming lessons, piano lessons, clogging lessons as a dance kind of thing. I would do plays in the summer, you know, children's theater, that kind of stuff. It continued into when I was a teenager. And 1 year, she said, oh, well, you won't do piano anymore. But how about singing lessons? The piano teacher also teaches singing. And I probably hemmed and hawed and whined and complained like nobody's business. But eventually, we tried the whole singing lessons thing. And that didn't last very long. I probably did it for 6 months or so. I don't practice or anything like that. I don't have ambition, as my father and uncle used to try and pound into my head. But yeah, one of the two or three songs that my singing teacher assigned me was Old Man River. And I haven't heard the song in 25 years or something like that, but I still remember a couple of little parts of it. And I wrote a story called Old Man River that I think it ended up airing on the Way of the Buffalo podcast. But, you know, I got an email the other day from somebody who said, yo, I sure like your Rish Outcast, but you planning on having a story on there anytime soon? And I am, but I could do more. I've been trying to put together performances of my stories in blocks and sort of do a collection or three. And there's nothing saying that I couldn't use those stories. Heck, I could run every single one of them on the Rish Outcast. And I don't know, maybe that would be wise. Maybe people like Scott Sigler and Cory Doctorow have their careers because they put out their work for free and gained legions of fans that way. I don't know. Legions of fans. Oh my goodness, it's 100 degrees. Wow, I didn't realize that. See, it's been warm the last few days, but it hasn't ever gotten up to 100 here this year. But the sun was just really shining down. I'm going to meet Big Anklevich for our weekly get-together. And I turned on the air conditioner, which I don't usually do because I'm a cheap bastard. I'm my father's son. He would always be like, we don't need that air conditioner. We're tougher than that. And somehow I am that same way. I'm just like, you know what? I'm tougher than this. I say that the heat doesn't bother me. I don't need to turn on the air conditioner. But I did just now because I was like, wow, it's warm. And then I looked. Yeah, it's exactly 100 degrees. That's a lot. So, sorry, let me go back. I wonder if I should do podcasts of all those stories that I already have recorded, that I'm editing or have edited. Maybe I will. I will attempt to do more stories. But, you know, you've heard me explain before, it's just way easier to do a conversation episode than to do a story episode. And another weird thing is I always feel like I ought to give the listeners of my podcast something extra. So, for example, the podcast version of Birth of a Sidekick has that really great music in it. And the podcast versions of some of these other stories, like Stormy Weather, have sound effects in them. And I don't think you're supposed to do sound effects or music on Audible. I've heard them before, certainly, but I think you're not supposed to. And so I try to always have a very bare bones, well, as bare bones as a reading by me can be, version there. But maybe I can have a little bit more fun with the ones on my podcast. Anyway, the guy sent me the email and he said, you know, are you having a story anytime soon? And I thought, well, I ought to do something. I thought about putting Like a Good Neighbor on here. And then the more I thought about that, the more it seemed like a Good Neighbor should be on the Doonstief, because it's big, it's long. I think it's like 90 minutes long. Maybe it's only an hour, I don't know. But for some reason, and I can't remember why, Old Man River jumped into my head. I'm just going to let that story play, and then we can talk a little bit after. Enjoy. All right, well, one more thing before I play the story. It's sort of by way of an apology, but I don't know. I've got this new microphone set up, and it's a bit... I've had it for a few months, so I shouldn't call it a new microphone setup, but that's how I think of it. And I have to remember to turn on the amplifier, plug in the microphone, and to remember to plug the microphone into the recorder. And I'd say about 60% of the time I remember to do those three things. You do the math. So anyhow, the other day I did a big old recording session. My sister's family were all at the cabin in the woods. So I had silence and I could just go for as long as I wanted. And I recorded a bunch of lines for people's podcasts. I recorded this story. I did some relines for my audiobook that I discovered there were a couple of mistakes. And then I started on another book and I just went until my voice was shot. Sometimes when you've got a character that talks like this or something, that contributes to messing up your voice, or my voice at least. I'm not classically trained, boys and girls. So I finished all that, and then I went to the lines that were the relines to finish up my audiobook so that it could be published, and I discovered that in this whole marathon recording session, I had not plugged the microphone into the recorder. And so the recorder was just recording room noise. It was recording the sound that it could hear, not even aimed at me, which sucks. And, you know, if it were the first time that that had happened, it would suck a lot less. Or maybe it would suck a lot more. I don't know. Basically, I'm just saying that nobody was to blame but myself. So I had to scrap all of that. Well, I sent the guy a sample of the lines. You know, it was for his podcast. He was doing a full cast thing, like a crazy person would. And I said, you know, hey, if the sound is too bad or that it's unusable, I'll redo it. But, I'd rather not. If it turns out that this is fine, then I will edit the lines and I'll get them to you. Let me know. And he never let me know. But I had to redo the redo lines. And then all the rest of the stuff I haven't redone. It's yet another excuse not to put out an audiobook, I guess. But I opened Old Man River. And part of me thought, well, you know, I can't use this audio to sell anything because it's not going to pass muster for Audible. But you know what? I'm going to use this anyway for the Rish Outcast, and I just won't sell Old Man River. So this is kind of an exclusive. At the same time, though, I do apologize if the sound is bad. I did what I could. I tried to clean it up and boost it and level it a little bit, but it might be crappy. Maybe not. Maybe I wasted the last 5 or 6 minutes talking when I didn't even have to. You would have been just fine to listen to the story. If so, hey, I appreciate people like that. No further ado, kids. Old Man River.
Old Man River. Adrian sat at the cashier's counter of the gas station, trying to concentrate on his biology homework, when the bell dinged at the front door. He glanced up, more out of habit than in interest. There was an old man shuffling into the station, stomping his feet to shed some of the snow, and removing his gloves. He looked to be about 70, though he was heavy-set, and that made it harder to tell. He seemed kind and harmless to Adrian, but that too was hard to tell just by looking. The man glanced at the papers in the rack, went to the coffee machine and poured himself a cup, then stepped up to the counter before Adrian could finish going over the bones of the hand a second time.
"Cold night," the man commented, sipping his coffee.
"Yep," Adrian said, glancing up at him. The old guy's fingers, ears, and nose were all pink from being outside for a while.
"Are you walking?" Adrian asked, imagining how cold it would seem out there after a mile in the moist air and icy wind. And that was if the customer was coming from town instead of toward it.
"No, just took a bit to make up my mind about something."
"Ah."
Adrian nearly asked him if he was considering robbing the store, but kept the joke to himself. He was glad he was stuck in here with a portable heater and four walls around him, rather than outside with the wind and wet and chill. Of course, being asleep in his bed would be even better, but somebody had to run the gas station between 9 and 1.
"Just the coffee?"
"Think so. Thought I'd buy a pack of cigarettes, but I've decided against it."
Adrian read another line in his biology text and said, "Good choice," before ringing up the purchase.
"Open late, aren't you?" the man asked.
"Yep," said Adrian. "Till 1. You driving very far?"
No. Just a couple more miles, really. I only thought I'd stop and indulge myself first."
Adrian nodded. He drank coffee all the time, but for a man of around 70, it probably wasn't healthy. He turned the page in his textbook.
"Well, you be careful on that road, all right?" the old man said. "I had myself a pretty nasty accident out there a long time ago."
"On the freeway?"
"It wasn't a freeway in those days, just a 2-lane road, but the route's the same."
A bushy white eyebrow raised.
"You want to hear about it?"
Adrian didn't know if he did or not, but he politely closed his homework and gave the stranger his full attention.
"Sure."
The old man was glad to tell it, his pleased smile announced. He set down the coffee cup and leaned in 1 or 3 inches.
"Let's see."
Adrian wondered if he was going to hear a long, rambling whopper filled with stumbles and misrememberings, but he was willing to give the man 1 minute of his time, or 5.
"I was 22. Not much older than you are now,"
the old man said, even though Adrian was 23.
"I had spent the week up north, just over the state line, looking into a job offer I was really excited about. Interview went all right, good money back in those days, and I was driving my pop's car back to him, listening to the AM radio and smiling like a dumb kid does before his life changes."
"Was it an icy road then?"
"No. It was springtime. April. But there had been rain. And you know, either the pavement was slick, or I was, going faster than I had any reason to. There's a little rise in the southbound road that crosses the Baxter River, and I hit it just right to fishtail on the way down, and plunge my daddy's Plymouth through the railing and into free fall, like a rocket ship.
You hit the water?
Nah, my aim was off.
He motioned with his hand what happened to the vehicle.
I hit the bank, the edge between land and river, and the car eventually tipped right side up in the water.
What did you do?
Me? Oh, I died.
He gauged the young man's reaction, then shrugged and continued with his story.
Maybe just shock, or something in between. But I opened my eyes and saw this girl, this young woman, walking toward me. She had on a skirt and a letterman jacket, and I knew even before she spoke to me that she wasn't from my day. Her face was smooth and pure and undefiled, like a perfect beauty, and I thought, it's an angel come to take me to St. Peter's Tollbooth, or maybe give me lessons on the harp or something. The girl came up to the side of the car, bent down and said, "Hello there. Looks like you've had a little scrape." Well, I opened my mouth to talk back, to ask her what was what, but I had no breath. "I know how it feels, believe me," she said. She looked at me tenderly, but also like she was real glad to see me. "I'm Paige," she says, "and I had a little scrape a long time ago, coming back from a football game. Been awful lonely here waiting. A girl gets to thinking by herself for so long that maybe she's not so pretty, not so popular, not like she thought."
The old man blinked, pretending to be his younger self.
So I opened my mouth to tell her she was pretty. She was practically divine, but...
"No breath," Adrian finished.
"Right you are." So she considered me a moment longer, looking me up and down like you would a sad-eyed puppy at a shelter. Then she said, "Are you ever lonely? Do you ever need somebody just to hold your hand?" Boy, howdy, I couldn't believe my good fortune. I stopped worrying about my pop's car and how I'd hit my chin on the steering wheel and tasted blood and I was wet and cold when I should have been hot from the scare and pain. All I could think of was how I could look at that face forever. Be happy just to get up each day and see those eyes, and then maybe, if I was even luckier, that smile. Somehow, I found the strength to say, "I'll hold your hand." Her eyes lit up, and she was so happy that I was so happy. I forgot about the car. I forgot about my injuries. It was all gonna be all right.
The old man's wistful smile faded. He sighed and came back to the present.
But it didn't last. I guess someone down the road had seen my accident and had pulled off and made their way to the riverside to see if I was okay. His name was Kaysen, a traveling salesman with a bow tie and suspenders, and he pulled me out of the car where he claimed my face had been blissfully smiling despite all the blood. He pounded on my chest and slapped my face until I opened my eyes and came out of my stupor. He sat next to my parents at my wedding. Kinsey Kaysen did. But at that moment, I was furious at him for pulling me back, or for slapping me because I took an awkward swing at him. I guess I only had energy for the one, but he still calmed me down and told me what had happened. And Paige stood next to him, her eyes big and wet with disappointment. She looked afraid, like a little girl who'd lost her mommy in the store. "Don't worry," I said to her. "I'm okay. It'll be fine." but she didn't say anything back. And Kaysen thought I was talking to him. He started to agree, and I told him, "Not you." And when I glanced away from him, Paige was backing away, shaking her head in sadness. "No, wait," I said. But then my chest started to hurt, and I saw fast-moving stars and had to lay back down. And I guess I passed out, because she was gone when I could finally lift my head again. Mr. Kaysen gave me a ride to the hospital, where they treated my bruises and broken ribs and stitched up a nasty gash on my chin that pretty much played hell with shaving for the next 15 years.
Adrian could see a white line above the old man's Adam's apple that might have been a scar many years before.
"And in that time, Paige was nearby,"
the man said.
"Sometimes I saw her in the room with me. Sometimes she was in the hall. Sometimes she sat and waited by my bed, vacating the chair when my mother was there, tended to me like I was still a boy. Nobody else acknowledged her. And I laughed the first time a nurse told me I'd been talking to myself. Paige never said anything to me, but I could feel her love and her loneliness. And I longed to be with her, even though I knew by this point that she was a ghost, and I was the only one who could see her. I got released from the hospital and went home, and she was there, sometimes in my old room, sometimes outside the window. 'Come with me,' she seemed to be saying. 'We belong together. I love you. I need you.'"
Adrian cut in. The old man's story was pretty compelling, if only because he seemed so sincere about telling it.
"And you weren't freaked out about this?"
"Sometimes I was, sure. But sometimes I thought about going with her. The call was strong. My pop was the only person I ever told about it. He claimed that it was all in my mind, my brain's way of dealing with nearly dying. But he didn't say I was crazy, at least. He said, 'Who knows, son? Maybe you finally made enough of an impression on a girl to get her to come home with you.' Not long after, I went back to work again, at my regular job, not the one up north. And I saw her there a couple of times. I worked a lot of hours, wanting to pay my pop back for the car. One night, when I was all alone at the shop, she came again. Paige tried to speak, and I leaned in to listen. And I could smell her hair and her breath, like wind through spring trees. I could hear her say, 'Please come with me. I'll treat you right.' Go with her? I knew what she meant, but didn't dare admit it to myself. She beckoned to me, saying, 'We'll be together, a family of our own.'"
The man swallowed. He gave Adrian a curious wink.
"I wanted to. Believe me, I did. But I was also afraid. Almost dying, or dying and coming back, had helped me appreciate my life and work harder for my goals, my desires. Things were looking up. Or maybe it was just my attitude. But I didn't want to die as much as I wanted to be with her. I met a lady, got married a year later, and we were happy. We had a pair of girls, and I did briefly consider naming one of them Paige, but thought better of it. I saw her a couple of times after that, usually when I was driving. I'd see her standing under a street lamp or waving from an overpass. Once, standing on the dotted line between the lanes. She always looked so sad, so in need of me. So beautiful. But I had a life now, and responsibilities, and the desire to be with her faded away, slowly but surely.
The old man glanced at the digital clock on the wall, with the old-fashioned Coca-Cola logo on it, and chuckled.
It looks like you're free to go now, son.
What? Adrian asked, turning to read the clock without understanding.
Oh, yeah, you're right. But finish your story, please.
Not much more to tell, really.
But she wanted you to die, to be with her for years after that, after your crash.
Yes. I think what Paige wanted was a family, a husband, a child, a sense of accomplishment. Her mother said she always wanted a son.
Well, whose mother?
Oh, I skipped that part, didn't I? I managed to find out about Paige's own accident from the local paper. And I did spend an afternoon at her house, speaking with her mother and father. She had been 17 when she died, and her boyfriend had recovered completely and moved away as soon as he was able. Went out to Oregon or someplace. Her parents were sweet, decent folks. And I nearly told them that Paige was right there, standing in the hall, listening. But I didn't. I only told them that she had been there, by my side, when I had my accident, and that she was still young and beautiful.
But did they believe you?
Oh, yes. One of Paige's friends had seen her once. Her ghost, that is. Right there on the road where we had both wrecked ourselves. The friend said that the girl had looked lonely. And this had upset her mother so that I lied and said she certainly looked happy when I saw her, helping people. Mrs. Jordan said her daughter had never had any ambitions other than having a husband and a little boy to take care of, which was sort of the way in those days. But she was glad Paige had found a new calling. It was a very, you know, intimate conversation between the two of us. Her father said almost nothing, just cried quietly from his place on the sofa. Paige stood by him for a little while, surprised by his grief, but he didn't notice.
The old man straightened. Adrian heard the popping of his joints under the man's coat.
That's about the whole of it, he said. The only new wrinkle is that I'm alone again. I got old fast. Faster than a young man like you would ever believe. My girls grew up, got married, and moved far away. I never had any sons either, so the ghost and I have that itch in common. My wife passed a little over a year ago. The service was a short one because the skies were itching to rain, though it never did. As I was walking back to Samantha's, my daughter's, car, I glanced over my right shoulder, and there she was. I recognized her at once. She was still so young, still so lovely. I nearly went over there to the ghost of Paige Jordan and talked to her. I guess I thought we could have a conversation, or maybe she could comfort me in a way that Pastor Michaels hadn't. She waved at me and gave me a smile. Some kind of mysterious female smile that I interpreted as, "Go ahead. Everything will be all right." I never saw her after that.
The old man pulled a pair of worn gloves from his coat and put them on with arthritic hands.
But I've spent time thinking about that smile in the last year or so. I've had nothing to do but think. And now I figure the wave and the smile meant, "See you soon."
Adrian swallowed.
You think she was telling you you were going to, you know,
die? No, not exactly. She was telling me to come back to her. And soon.
The old man smiled.
Tonight?
I hope not. Just drive carefully, and wear your seatbelt.
All right,
the old man said, looking tired.
What's your name, son?
Adrian,
he muttered sheepishly. I know, but my mom thought she was having a girl until, like, a month before I was born.
Adrian, thanks for listening to my little tale of woe. You strike me as a solid, level-headed boy.
Thanks?
It was good meeting you, son.
You too, Adrian said. He got up, flipped off the open sign, and waved as the old man left the station.
Drive safe,
he called.
It took Adrian 10 minutes to close everything up, turn off the coffee makers, empty the register, put the credit card receipts in the envelope, wipe up the drips and crescents around the fountain drinks, switch off the pumps and the lights and the heater. But he was on the road toward home only 5 minutes later than he normally would have been. The temperature was just above freezing, so there was no ice on the freeway, and it actually felt nice starting up his little Japanese car and driving into the dark night. When he noticed the flashing lights up ahead, he understood what they meant. He realized he'd known all along what the old man had been saying, and why he told his story, if not why he chose him to tell it to. Farther up the road, a patrol car was in the right lane, lights ablaze, so people would go around. It was the overpass where the river ran below, and there was a section missing from the railing beside the cop car. Adrian slowed as he went around, craning his neck for a look down below. The old man's car had plowed through the overpass and fallen toward the icy river. He hadn't missed the water this time. I didn't even ask him his name, he realized. Adrian considered driving on home, but he had no one waiting for him, and he thought he'd always regret it if he didn't check it out. So he got off on the next exit and doubled back on the country road alongside Baxter River. More red and blue lights were flashing there. Another police car and an ambulance were parked off the road, but they were alongside the shore with nothing to do and no one to save. Something shined in the middle of the river when the lights flashed on it. Adrian recognized it as a fender. One of the paramedics started toward Adrian's car, presumably to wave him away, so he did an awkward 3-point turn and prepared to drive back the way he came. The old man waved at him from the water's edge. Adrian stopped the car, looking around more carefully. Next to the old man was the young girl, dressed in old-fashioned cheerleader clothes, looking beautiful and happy. The old man was smiling too. He waved again, trying to call Adrian over. But Adrian didn't move. The girl began waving too.
Come over here. Join us.
Paige always wanted to have a son, he remembered the old man saying. And he had had only daughters. Adrian put the car in drive and headed back toward the freeway and home. He didn't dare look in the rearview mirror for at least the first mile.
That was Old Man River. And, you know, I don't know that the title is all that great. I've told you before, and I'll say it again, I love to use song titles as the titles of my stories. There's nothing I love more, writing-wise at least, than that. I love it. If I could swap out every single title that I've ever written that's not a song title for one that is a song title, I would probably do it. Anyhow, before I played the story, I was saying I couldn't remember why Old Man River jumped into my head. But what it was there's the story Magic Claw, which is the magical claw machine story that I wrote. And it takes place in a gas station. I think it's the Shop and Go gas station in Praisedon, which is the imaginary town where tons of my stories take place, or most of my old stories from 15 years ago take place. And I thought that it would be cool if the clerk in Magiclaw were the same clerk as the one in Old Man River. And then just recently I wrote a story called Remember the Future, and I put a reference to Adrian, the clerk, in there too. I don't know. I mean, it certainly doesn't make these stories any better, but it makes my job more fun to do that, to have the same characters pop up. I probably stole it from Stephen King. I just remember the first couple of times that I discovered, you know, characters that popped up or places that popped up and realized, you know, in the same town and people's names show up again and again. It thrilled me. It was like I had discovered something, like I knew a secret or something, or an in-joke kind of thing. So I did it for a while there, starting in about 2000. I wrote a bunch of stories that were connected, and several times the same characters would pop up. And then I stopped doing that. I was worried that I was a hack. And now here we are. You know, everything is cyclical. I've become that hack again, and I've embraced it. I forgot. I had the children prepare something for next time I presented a story on here. Go ahead.
Let's all say it together, class.
It's not a great story.
Thanks. They keep me humble, these kids. What can I say? I like it anyway, though. I like Old Man River, and I've got more stories about old men than anything, probably. I write a lot of stories about kids, and I write a lot of stories about old men. And I think I told you that the film teacher that would always try and challenge us and attack our sacred cows and such, he apparently said that the only people who should make movies are the very young and the very old. And I don't actually remember him saying that, but Big used to quote it a lot. And he would say, there's an accident here on the road. Bear with me as I slowly veer. Can you slowly veer? Veer sound is like a speedy thing, like swerve. You can't slowly swerve. But as I slowly move into this lane and avoid the accident. But Big told me that the teacher had said that, and it made a big impression on him, that young people have a ton of things in their heads and they have something to prove. You know what I mean? They haven't been beaten down by life yet or had all their dreams. They haven't learned to compromise so much yet. And so they're good storytellers. And then old people, they see that the time is running out. The clock is ticking. They know they don't have that many stories left in them. And so there's almost a desperation there of, okay, now I must tell this story. And that's Big's interpretation of what our film teacher said that I never actually heard, or if I did, it went in one year and out the other. But I like it. I really like that attitude. Anyhow, let's see. Story about a ghost. Basically, the ghostly hitchhiker of urban legend. We've all heard stories about ghostly hitchhikers. I've written a couple myself. There's one I may release someday called Beware Hitchhiking Ghosts. And if you can come up with a song title, I will happily discard that title in favor of a song title version. But, I think that's about it. I don't know what else I had to say. I had a lot to say before the story began, and I finally slammed on my metaphorical brakes and said, okay, hey, I will come back to this after I've run the story. And now that I've run the story, nothing. I don't know what to say. Another thing that I really enjoy doing, and I've told you this before also, right? Is I love to have a character tell a story within my story. And that might be a crutch. You know what I mean? It might be something that I have gone back to too many times and I should avoid. But I don't think that I will. Sorry. Like in Into the Furnace, there's a chapter where we hear the villain's history, and there's a part where the sheriff tells a story, you know, a legend kind of thing, a piece of folklore. And I like that stuff. I like a character telling another character or a group of characters a story. I wrote a story called Grandpa's Gift. Gosh, that doesn't sound right. I wrote a story a few years back called Grandpa's Gift, I think. I think that's what it was called. And in that, there's a story that Grandpa tells about his history and how he became so lucky. And then for a contest, a year or so later, I had Grandpa tell another story. And I think that one was called Grandpa's Tale. And I actually won that contest with that story. But it was too long, as is. You know, it had like a word length limit. And so what I had to do was cut out the framing device of Grandpa telling his grandson the story, and it ended up just being the story part. I don't know why I'm telling you this. I guess I wanted you to get your money's worth. You got a story, you get some explanation, you get a song. You get some thanks from me for listening to my show. You can always go out and find these stories and buy them. There are collections out there. There are things that you'll never hear on the Rish Outcast. Although, boy, it is tempting, as I've said. But I sure would appreciate it if you spent some money on me. Wait, that sounds weird. It's like, buy me a fur coat. Anyway, thanks for listening to the show. If you listen to it a lot, I really thank you. If you just listen to the story episodes, well, very small thank you, but still, thanks.
I get weary and sick of trying. I'm tired of living, but scared of dying. But Old Man River, he just keeps rolling along.
The music in today's episode was presented by Kevin MacLeod of the website Incompetech.com. The Rish Outcast just happens to be produced under a Creative Commons Attribution No Derivatives 3.0 license. I don't really know what that means, and I'm betting that you don't either. Have a nice night.